Greetings, this is Jan Thielen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We're on a little late because of technical failure as usual. It seems like it's a never-ending story here. We've had our radio show pretty much taken out, the power line going into the home broadcasting unit, and the phones as well got fried, both simultaneously. Quite interesting. But and now the names have been all changed, Skype's all messed up, we don't know what's going on. But obviously, we must be doing something really good because, you know, the old saying, if you're receiving a lot of flack, you're over the target. Those people who are on our email list, be sure and sign up. Go to the eSETI.org site and sign up on the email list because we just filmed some of the most incredible UFO footage here with ships that look like suns flying, you know, right over the ranch. And we've had hundreds of people up here to witness just in the past, you know, couple weeks to witness these events. And so we have their witness testimony as well. So it's pretty much a done deal. You know, contact is here. It's happening. The ships are here. And, you know, the evidence is overwhelming. Not overwhelming. Anyway, so I've got a great show. I've got Wade Frazier on my show. And Wade is a groomed scientist from an early age. He became fascinated by the subject of alternative energy when just a teenager. As is often the case with those with polluting vision, life misses when so young. His life path then propelled him through a series of hard-hitting experiences that qualify him to be one of the preeminent writers on the subject today. His website is ahealedplanet.net, and it's got about 1,200 pages of deeply thought-out, intelligent, well-informed commentary on a number of the most important issues of our time. He's worked with Dennis Lee, all just kinds of people. I can go on and on about Wade, but I really want to get him on the show and find out more about what he's up to now. But so, Wade, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on, James.
Oh, yeah, it's good to have you on. Yeah, I'm actually broadcasting from my cell phone right now because all the other avenues weren't functioning.
Sorry to hear that. That's those strange coincidences.
Oh yeah, the you know, there's. I'm really curious about what your studies have you know, brought about as far as a viable alternative. You know, with this the fearless energy technologies and some of the other technologies that are seem to be surfacing everywhere and having a real hard time on going anywhere at the same time.
Yeah, that's been. That hard time thing goes back to Tesla and probably earlier. So yeah, it's and that's part of the conundrum, right? Is that and well, heck, you was it Max? I think is the guy's name.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Max had something, and oh, there's lots of technology, you know, and so technology, you know, this is where some of us who've been in it for a while, once you. You know, do the Indiana Jones thing, play all these games, eventually realize that technology's not the problem. That's really not the problem. There's plenty of that around. It's the, you know, I've called the free energy conundrum, and it's a common term now, but yeah, it's difficult. And, there's many challenges to this. Somebody like you, James, that's not new. You know, there's many challenges to this whole thing of bringing it forward, you know. And I think the combination of organized suppression and the inertia of humanity is proven to be a pretty difficult thing to overcome. And anyway, so I've really my work anymore has not been around necessarily developing a technology. I've been involved in that kind of activity, but again, as you get into it, you realize that the problems they're a lot bigger than that. And in the end, they're not really about that. I mean, that's kind of one of the paradoxes of the whole thing is it's really not about technology, but that would be the outcome. And, you know, people like me, I in fact, my experiences in this have been that social controllers, whatever you want to call them, you know, making free energy and abundant space reality and these things, making it unimaginable is, I think, their greatest triumph. And so what people like me are trying to do is make this imaginable, bring it onto the radar, bring it into the realm of possibility, because I do know these technologies exist, you know. And again, go down to your ranch and you see them flying over all sorts of, you know, interesting technologies, right? So it's real. I mean, again, people go to your ranch and they go, oh, okay, there we go, that's real. And being able to make that a daily part of our reality here down on the ground is that's a tough trick, you know. And there have been people attempting to, you know, manifest that, let's say, in our daily lives for, you know, 100 years, but it's a challenge, a huge challenge, obviously.
Definitely. So it's been around since the 30s, it seems like, the 40s for sure, but it seems like it's even been around since the 30s. And could even be before that, who knows? But there's many documented cases of over-unity, and, you know, like especially with Tesla's work, where he was broadcasting energy that anybody could pick up anywhere, but they couldn't put a meter on it, you know. They couldn't control it, so they got rid of that technology.
Absolutely, and again, he's certainly one of the iconic figures in this area. And so that was a long time ago that he was working on that. And so, once he decided to pursue, you know, quote, free energy, or anybody could tap into it, then the robber barons didn't like that one bit, you know. And so, and in one version or another, that's been the story ever since, you know, really. I mean, and again, on the suppression end, and again, I've been on the receiving end of many of the games they play, they've developed quite a bag of tricks.
Oh yeah.
Quite a bag of tricks over the generations. And so it's a science. The suppression of disruptive technologies, and I'd say free energy is probably just disruptive technology number one. It's very good. It's a very good thing. And one of the things that is a real challenge about this, James, and again, this won't be news to you, but the issue of organized suppression, et cetera, you know, the mainstream, that's a conspiracy theory, et cetera, right? And so, and then one of the things about that is that people who are out there on the front lines, it's the suppressed ones, for instance, you know, nobody. I mean, it's a lonely. That's a lonely, lonely journey. And those who survive it, you know, they don't find a bunch of people waiting to, you know, commiserate and offer help, etc. It's a difficult thing. And so what turns out is that they end up using most of their energy trying to establish credibility and overcome that stuff, and that becomes the focus of it, is organized suppression. Oh, there isn't. Yes, there is. And what I'm trying to do is acknowledge that, because, I mean, again, if you've been in the field long enough, you know that stuff's real, but it's that's a real stumbling block to get hooked up on that, you know, to really focus on that aspect of it. And so to move beyond that, and again, what I'm trying to do is help make free energy, abundance, space, reality, these things, make them imaginable, make them understandable. And what I found, and this is something that it took me a long time to understand this, is that, and again, the people who do this, again, one of my, you know, partners in crime is Brian O'Leary on this. And what you find is that the idea of free energy and abundance is, again, it's hard for almost anybody to really wrap their minds around that. It's very difficult. And what you find is that there's all these, and what I found, again, it took me a long time to understand this, is that all of the objections to why it doesn't exist or why we shouldn't have it or all these kinds of things, what they all had in common was a root assumption of scarcity. And so that's part of the issue, is that the root assumption of scarcity that we carry around with us, which is deeply baked into the human psyche, this is actually, I think this is the issue, is can we let go of all our scarcity-based ways of believing and acting, et cetera? And you know, the answer is love. I mean, obviously, the answer is coming from that abundant place, and it starts in the heart. And so, but anyway, you know, somebody like me found that out kind of the hard way. You know, it took a long time, many years to understand that. And once you, and again, you know, I sort of survived my adventures, but as you're picking up the pieces of it, you're kind of going, you know, really, it's a real, I think for a while, and I think you can probably relate to this, James, is that mm-hmm. you're wondering if you're sane or not. I mean, there's parts where you're kind of, am I crazy? And so you go through all those, you know, there's all these wickets we end up going through to come to this perspective. And anyway, it's something that I think of enough people. I mean, what I'm trying to do, and I call it singing the abundance song, but if enough of us really could, in a very real nuts, I mean, there's a nuts and bolts aspect of it we need to understand, but it's just a thing of if enough of us can embrace abundance as an idea, as a way of being, I don't think it would take that many people to form a critical mass to really catalyze some amazing changes. And so that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, some of the things that I experienced were quite interesting because I mean, I saw firsthand in trying to help our other friend, you know, a German scientist to get this out. I saw him, you know, have his car stolen. We were threatened countless times.
Yes.
His family was threatened. They blew his lab up. You know, it was just one thing after another. And
Yes. And
some of the people around us aren't alive anymore. And if people think this is a conspiracy, I mean, look at Eugene Maloff. You know, he was bludgeoned to death in his house by, you know, right before he was going to go to Congress and spill the beans on all these technologies.
Well,
so it's not a conspiracy.
Interesting you bring up Maloff because I was a founding member of the New Energy Movement. Brian mm-hmm. O'Leary invited me to do that in 2003. And a few days before Maloff died, we had arranged for him to be the first speaker at a conference we had in Portland, Oregon. And literally the week after we lined him up, because most of the board knew him, it was a very strange week. And one of the members, very tuned in member, emailed me, said, "I think we're under attack." And when he emailed me that, they were just discovering Maloff's body.
Mm-hmm.
And so, at this point they're saying that it now is maybe, you know, his renters did it. And how to say it? I don't think I'll ever quite buy if they ever solve the crime this way. I'll always have doubts.
Oh, yeah.
But,
the synchronicities are too clear, you know, that right before these events, you know, that he gets taken out. And I know Walter Rosenthal, I was working with him, and he's, you know, Mr. Rocket Scientist, basically, and he ends up with cancer and dies right after, you know, working with the scientists that we were working with along, you know, so it's just a long history of crazy, you know, psychotronics, name it. One inventor that we met with that was on to something very similar, and he had it. You know, had it all together and everything. They found him, you know, right after a meeting, you know, just a few days later, I heard about it. He was found laying, you know, he opened his door and fell out of his car and was laying there in a pool of blood coming from the inside out, which was a pretty, happened to him was pretty nasty.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, there are people who have chronicled, you know, the trail of blood, and it's, you know, it's quite a roll call. And giving you cancer psychotronically, that's apparently a standard operating procedure. I mean, there's just, again, their bag of tricks is quite large. However, what I discovered, and again, this is kind of see the britches style, is that getting violent, they don't need to do that very often. they've got many ways to keep these pesky disruptive technology people at bay, you know, when they start getting violent, it means you're starting to get, you know, so you're starting to become a nuisance. And most of us, you know, don't get up to that level. I mean, when I was with, my partner Dennis was offered $1 billion to go away back in the 80s. And then back in the 90s, they mounted a highly sophisticated sting operation. In fact, I was talking with Tom Bearden about it. About a couple years later, and anyway, he was. I heard him talk about how they were, back then they were setting you up in these sting operations where they would approach you and say, "Hey, how about all this money? You know, here's all this money. You know, that here we go. Here, how about $1 billion to make your dreams come true?" And it turns out it's dirty money, you know, like laundered drug money through the CIA, et cetera. And if you sign on the dotted line, you whisk off to prison. And so anyway, I say it's quite a large bag of tricks they have. And the getting violent part is, you know, I think it's relatively rare that they do that. I think years ago, let's say 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it was more common. I think now, in fact, I heard that about 20 years ago when the Soviet Union collapsed, it started becoming more subtle, more sophisticated, fewer. I mean, they weren't just killing families and this kind of stuff. So anyway, James, but that part of it, I mean, that's real.
Yeah.
And again, you can't be in this field for very long before you obviously start hearing a lot of those kinds of stories. And then you start encountering people you encounter the survivors of these, you know, these events. And it's, that's quite a, you know, that's a real eye opener, you know, to be through that stuff. And
is there anybody that has something now that's, you know, viable that is, you know, producing a large amount of electricity, let's say,
that is
still, you know, on the books and getting ready to do anything with it?
There are people who, so for instance, O'Leary, he's really thinking that Rossi over there in Italy may be close to doing something, but you know, he's playing the patent game and he's trying to, he's got a dealership network with, you know, kind of secret components. And I mean, I'll tell you, my experience has been when you start going down that, you know, down that capitalist inventor path, I mean, that's where nobody's ever escaped from that lair before. I mean, again, they got those avenues tightly controlled, you know, and so it's difficult. And so the good stuff, again, my understanding is probably upwards of 10,000 different people have been, you know, removed from the scene, but usually gently. Usually they give you a huge bribe. They buy you out. I mean, that's what the vast majority of the time, that's what happens. And then you don't hear from them anymore because that's part of the deal, is they now have the rights to your stuff. And so, or, you know, the military also does a security order. And there's been thousands of those cases where the military can, you know, put a top secret security classification on it. And then it's illegal for the inventor to even talk about it anymore. So, I mean, that's, again, those avenues are, they're pretty locked up. I mean, I don't think that, and again, I'll say it, the lone inventor or the small movements that are trying to do that, you know, it's easy. You know, I was involved in a movement. We were going for it, and we had, you know, there were hundreds of people involved. But even with hundreds of people involved, unleash a provocateur to, you know, have the authorities come down on you, and of course, because everybody realizes, you know, at some level, you're talking about a quadrillion-dollar technology, you know, it's just becomes a pretty bloody, you know, pretty bloody series of events that maybe a few people survive, you know. And so, anyway, that whole path is, I don't think it's going to work. And that's where I am. I don't think the current environment is going to work, you know. And what I saw was missing was an engaged and aware public. And that's kind of what I'm going back to, make the whole thing imaginable, because the, you know, if you had 100 Malovs, Trombleys, you know, O'Learys, these kind of, who all combined their forces and lockstep and marched and really did it, 100 of them, yeah, I think they could do it, because they would form a strong nucleus that everything could form around. But there's only a handful of people like that I've encountered, you know. And so
I know some of the people. Yeah, some of the people, I won't mention names, but I know some of the people in the movement are not who you think they are, and I know, you know, firsthand, people have demonstrated, you know, demonstrated objects that did work and way over Unity, and they took them apart, put them back together, ran them again, and they never got that big bonus check that they were supposed to get for demonstrated, and right afterwards, their car was stolen.
Oh, all those things. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
When I see, when they get that far along, it's sort of like, you know, how to say it. If you value self-preservation, stand way back at that point. You know, but it's just, again, there's too few. And to your point, absolutely. I've encountered provocateurs. They infiltrated our organizations. I mean, this stuff, yeah, this stuff's all real. I mean, there's, again, these guys have, the people putting the lid on this, their resources are, you know, again, my partner, we'll put a one on the, we'll put a one on the check. You put the zeros on it. How much, you know, how much do you want to go away? And I'm sure that they're, I would imagine, my rough estimate of the numbers I've seen from some of the people who have played at these levels is they've paid out, you know, today they probably paid out close to $200 billion in quiet money, okay? Mm-hmm. They probably they've probably spent an equivalent sum for, or maybe a few times more than that, on their global surveillance, on, you know, their dirty tricks department, all these things. I mean, it's a... These guys have a lot of resources, and it's a thing where a lone inventor trying to scale the ramparts. I mean, going to the patent office. I mean, you know, as soon as you start going that route, it's over. I mean, I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can pull it off going that route. You know, and or
yeah, they have some technologies like Stanley Meyer had the water technology, and he went and met with the military, and the next day he's dead. And then they had a guy over in Japan. Now, this is really interesting. It was on YouTube, and this guy had this little, small little car, ran 100% on water. He was driving it around, and he said, yeah, this is the next generation. We're going to start building these cars. And all of a sudden, this guy disappeared off the face of the earth. And I had some friends over in Japan that also have radio shows and things like that, and I said, hey, can you get a hold of this guy? I want to get this guy on the show and get him on your show. And so they went and tracked this guy down, and they found the address. They found where he had his lab and everything else. And they asked the people there, you know, have you seen this guy? And they go, no, they packed everything up and nobody knows where the guy went. He just vanished.
Oh, no, absolutely. And what I'll say, though, is that the stories, and again, these are all real, but the vast majority of the time, they just say, hey, how about $10 million for this thing you're working on in your garage? We really like that. We want to buy the rights to it. Mm-hmm. And most inventors are doing it for the money anyway, so they're going, hey, that sounds good. And part of the deal, though, is that they're done. I mean, it's gold. I call it the golden handcuffs, you know, and that's, it's been, I mean, by this time, 20 years ago, the guys around the world told Greer it was 10,000 people they had done that with. And again, when we were picking up the pieces from what happened to us in Seattle in 86, 87, we got the first friendly buyout offer. It was, how about $10 million for that nice drawing on the whiteboard, you know? And then again, a year later, they added a couple zeros. And most of the time, and when they come to approach you to buy it out, it's not, hey, we're Mr. Big, and we're buying it to suppress it. They don't, you know, again, it's a very subtle game they play. So I'd imagine that most people who took the money really didn't even understand what was happening. You know, they were just kind of inventing, and they wanted to do this, and somebody, you know, they got the offer they wanted in the first place, and they're happy, and they're getting a tan in the Bahamas now. I mean, that's, again, the well these guys can dig, the resources they have at an individual level, like you and I are, you know, it's mind-boggling the resources they have. But also, there's not that many of them, really. I mean, there's like 7 billion of us, you know, and it's a thing and that's where I am, is that if 10,000 people really woke up to this stuff and really united their, just even their thoughts and focused their intention and awareness on it, you know what? I think that'd be enough. I really do. And in a positive way. And combined positive intention. I think that's what I am attempting to achieve, is combined positive intention. And, though, I also acknowledge, God, as Greer calls him, Godzilla. Godzilla's real, and I go, my, what big teeth you have. I am impressed. But it's a thing where I know that Godzilla can't be defeated in battle, can't sneak past him. You know, in fact, I don't think Godzilla can be negotiated with either. I think that Godzilla, if enough of the land stood up, I think Godzilla would probably slink away. That's kind of my hope. But anyway, and that's probably as you know, I think maybe listeners are saying, well, there's another Don Quixote there with the Wild Dream. But that is, over the years, I think that's, I'm trying to accomplish, I'm trying to go that avenue because I didn't see anybody try it yet. And so I'm trying to see if I can just raise enough awareness of what free energy can mean and an abundance-based reality and see if we can unhook from all of the scarcity-based assumptions that undergird almost all of our thinking processes, all the ideology. I mean, literally, the thinking of the world, the root assumption is one of scarcity, and it's so pervasive. And if people can just sort of flip that switch to think, what would an abundance assumption look like, and just sort of let their imagination get there, and really, you know, hook that up to their awareness, I think magic can happen. I mean, that's what I think. And so, but I think there's need to be, I think there needs to be enough who can form this, I'll say, critical mass. And so that's what I'm trying to accomplish. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to have a chance, but it's the one that, avenue that I didn't see. I hadn't seen it tried yet in that way. And so we'll see. I don't know. I spent about 20 years now kind of doing this. I mean, that's about 20 years of my life now. Is after I got my clock cleaned, I spent, you know, all my spare time and a few years of full time, you know, pursuing that avenue. And I don't know, we'll see. You know, Brian O'Leary, he and I we're kind of singing the same song, and there's a few, but there's a few. I mean, it's a few, and it's up until now, it's been a very lonely journey to be pursuing these paths. And I'm just hoping that in the future, it won't be quite as lonely. And I think if more people can focus their positive intention and awareness on this issue, and again, the solutions get, you know, if we can just imagine ourselves past the hump, you know, and what that could look like, I think that can be, for me, in all the dark days, et cetera, that was sort of the vision that sustained me a lot, was what could be on the other side of that. And so I think if enough of us can imagine what that can look like, that would be, I think, extremely helpful for the these guys that are the Indiana Jones types who are trying to do it. Because that's the problem when you're Indiana Jones and they come after you, you're one guy with a whip, you know, and they've got you know, they've got quite, again, it's like it's like the German army's after you and you're Indiana Jones of the whip. And it's again, we've been there, and we, you know, you survive to maybe try again, but it's I would rather see a movement that didn't demand so much of a few heroes. You know, God bless them, these heroes that are doing this, but I'd like to see them get a lot more help to where they don't have to be so heroic and risk their lives the way they risk their lives. And so that's, in the end, that's what I'm trying to drum up, I say.
So public awareness is probably more the way to go right now. I know a lot of people, when you bring this up, there's several things that go on. You know, they go, well, you know, you can't go over unity. That breaks all the known laws of science. And they bring that issue up. And then and then they just start saying, well, it's impossible. There's no way, you know, you can do that. And then you say, well, wait a second. You know, I always tell them, I said, well, is there, you know, somebody on a bicycle pedaling, making the earth spin around? Who's making the earth spin? You know, and look at the sun. Look what it's doing. You know, is somebody shoveling coal into the sun, you know, and it's all around us. I mean, you know, endless energy is all around us, but to make us think that it's impossible, that we can't do it, defies, you know, nature. It defies common sense.
Yeah, so in fact, you go back to Tesla and Murray, they were, Tesla's initial stuff was actually tapping the electric potential in the atmosphere, and Murray was similar to where some of these so-called free energy devices early on were tapping essentially the sun's energy in an indirect way. But most of the free energy technology that I'm aware of is what they call zero-point technology, and is taking advantage of, or it's harvesting what's considered the background energy of the universe. And this is and even Einstein, you know, he said, you know, with his general theory, he goes, there's an ether. I mean, there really is It's not nothing, you know, of spaces, and this is energy from the vacuum, et cetera. And when, how to say it, that the crux of it is that an energy source? And some of the greatest physicists of all time have said, oh, yes, there's a lot of energy there if we can just figure out how to tap it. And pretty much all the free energy technology that I'm aware of, it's tapping that. But it's not easy. It's not easy to tap that. And a guy in his garage, again, it's, you know, Brian O'Leary, he's always made the Wright brothers in the airplane analogy. And he said, you know, at this point, you know, they were sort of, you know, stumbling along. Kitty Hawk got airborne for a few minutes. We're a long way from a Boeing 747, but with enough effort, we can. And what I also know, though, is that the big guys, they do have Boeing 747s, but we're still, with the horse and buggy. And so that's part of the issue. But, no, the technology exists. And, in fact, James, on my shows, I usually will tell this story where – in the circles I run around with, one of my close associates was giving the underground technology show by the people who run the world. And, it's anti-gravity, you know, free energy, you know, maybe even time travel. I mean, at those levels, they have this stuff. I mean, they have it. So So what it comes down to is that the people I know that know about this stuff know they have this stuff. They're pretty much going, well, I don't – how to say it, they're not giving it to us, so I guess we got to try it on our own. And so most of the guys that are out there, they're trying it on their own. They're trying to tap this on their own, but it's difficult. I mean, it's really, it's a lot harder than it looks. And, Bearden and O'Leary, and I'll buy it. They pretty much said, if you want to come out with a working free energy prototype ready for mass production, you can put on people's homes, et cetera, you need a few $100 million. I mean, that's about what you need, and that's part of the problem, because if anybody who's come up with that kind of money, they're on the radar, you know, and people who have, I mean, there's been attempts to go that route, but the big guys, again, those avenues are all shut off. I mean, they're really all shut off at this time, and
Most of the big guys got to be big guys by being smart and investing in, you know, a lot of industries, war industries, things like that. And they're not going to put their whole kingdom at risk, you know, just to bring out, you know, a fuel of energy technology or whatever else. They're just not going to go there, and they're going to get that knock on the door and by some of the other powers that be. I think that are, I call them the powers that were, because they are going to implode on themselves.
Yeah.
But, they say, well, if you go there, this is going to happen. You know, you've got some pretty big bank notes out on these buildings and this and that, and we just might have to call those loans. When they see they could actually lose their whole kingdom, then they disappear real quickly.
Oh, yeah. So, as I've said it, nobody, and in fact, the individual who got the show, it wasn't, how to say it, so at the level you're talking about, and it's not very many people, but it's pretty fragmented. And I'm pretty sure that the show that my friend got was from the Disenchanted faction, who, yeah. I mean, they want to come out. And so when the show came out, they're pretty much saying, you know, we want to help, but we're not about to defy, and I'll call them Godzilla openly. They're not about to do that. And so, yes, any big corporation who's going to think they're going to, no, that's what I'm saying. Any chairman of the board who all of a sudden gets frisky, you know, or Bill Gates thinks he's going to – no, they will be dissuaded pretty quickly. Now, the thing is that they're good at this. They don't come out right out and threaten you. They just try to lead you – they try to bait you, to give you some bait to lead you away from that and lead you down some alley where you're never going to come out and be productive. And the open threats – and they happen – but it's usually it's down the road a ways when they pulled out several tricks out of their bag before they have to resort to threats and violence and freezing your bank accounts and all those kinds of things. It's a very they have a science. And I remember Beard talking about it. It's a science they have to keep, and most stuff, the early tactics work, okay, and most of the people who've been derailed, they don't even know they've been messed with. They don't even understand what happened. You know, they're just kind of like
some other program or agency came down on them for some other dissimilar event. But you know, the way I see it, they just get a file on you, and then they have about 10 agencies come down on you at once, and then you, you gradually, you know, basically crawl under the woodwork or something just to get away. But, you know, that's basically the way they operate.
Well, you know, and that's also, though, when they do that, you're getting, again, I wouldn't say on the 1 to 10 scale of a bag of tricks, you're getting up to a 5 and a 6 when they do that. A lot of stuff they have, I mean, the friendly buyout offer happens before that. The subtle sabotage stuff happens before that. You know, again, it's I've been on the legal end of that where the feds or the locals or, you know, they break their door down and they clean your, I've had my office cleaned out, you know, and so it's a thing where those things happen too, but they don't need to, how to say, they're efficient. Okay. It's sort of like they'll do what they need up to the point that it works. And so this doesn't work, and then they'll escalate to the next level and see if that works. You know, and that's kind of how, because a trail of dead bodies, if everybody was taken out by murder, I think everybody would have figured it out by now. Even the general public would have. But it doesn't happen that often. And so, and again,
well, I've been watching a program that they use. It's quite interesting. It's like a PSYOPS program. And they, first of all, they start off, they dismiss, you know, any claims or anything you say, they just dismiss it outright, you know, and, they'll bring somebody that is some authority or somebody with, you know, a PhD or whatever to dismiss it. And then the second phase is they go after the discredit, you know, they try to discredit you.
Yep.
And if that doesn't work, then they accuse you of being one of them. You know, and it's hilarious. What I mean, I get that too. People go, "Oh, you're the cabal," you know. They
say,
"You work for the you work for the cabal," and I go, "What are you talking about? Where's my paycheck with all the zeros behind it? You know, I haven't even seen one. Nobody's even made an offer."
Yes.
And you know,
and as you know, though, some of our fellow travelers are on the payroll. You know,
absolutely. Definitely. And that's their job, you know, rather than, you know, they're the ones that are screaming the loudest that are on the payroll. They're the ones that are calling everybody else, you know, the pot calling the kettle black. It's pretty interesting, but.
Yes,
you know,
it is. Again, there's a milieu there that is quite a, you know, it's interesting to study. And you know, I've lived through, again, I sort of have various categories of the levels that they play at, and I've experienced, unfortunately, most of that, and eventually you're kind of getting you can't outsmart them. You can't outsmart these guys. It's like that won't work. We can't outsmart them. I mean, this is they are experts at this in a way that we could never hope to compete with, you know.
I gotta tell you what's going on right now. This is hilarious, but right now I'm looking out my window at, you know, Mount Adams. You've been up there and, you know, seeing the beautiful view. And I don't know if you can see it from where you are, but there is this massive V. It's a chemtrail, you know, undeniable, huge, massive chemtrail. But it's one of those V for vendetta or whatever, victory, right coming down right on the mountain. You know, is that for us personally, is that like a little gift or some kind of a sign or, you know, I don't know. But
strange things happen, especially where you live, James.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I got to get I don't know if I'll have time to get out and get a picture of this, but I need to take a picture. It's hilarious. But, you know, there's, Yeah, you've been up here. I know you've witnessed some of the strange things. And I bet you got all kinds of flack just talking about, you know, some of the ships and other things that you've seen up here.
You know, an interesting thing about where you are, James, is that, you know, actually, no, I turn people on. In fact, the Boeing guys I took there, they were never the same. 30 seconds, about a minute after you said, "Let me see if I can get one to do one," and it lit up for us. Yeah, they were never the same. And I've had people from around the world come to your ranch and they go, "Well, wasn't that quite a show?" You know, and so, and I think if people show up and they watch it, it's hard to explain it all away as you know, satellites and, you know, what the heck's that flash on the mountain and all you know, all the stuff you see there. And it's a thing where what you do Absolutely. I get attacked by sometimes, but usually if I'm interacting with people and I tell them, hey, go down and do that, they're kind of like, okay, if I can go do that, I'll do that. And so, I've directed a number of people out to your ranch and they come back with, wow. Wow. So
we had them on we've had some of the engineers and some of the other people you brought, the Boeing people on actually have, I can't mention their names, but there's Boeing people here right now as we speak. There's been so many Lockheed Boeing engineers. We've had NASA people here that won't talk about it. They refuse to talk about it, but they admitted, this is the real deal, that these aren't ours, and they're definitely extremely advanced craft, I just wonder, that's another thing. I bet you're watching that too, but people, I hear people on, coming on Coast to Coast, and again, I don't really mention a lot of names, but, they're talking about, they're the science project or coordinators or whatever, who's in the know. And they keep talking about, we need to get a new shuttle. We need to, too bad we're not going to be able to get up to the space station anymore because they're condemning the last shuttle or mothballing the last shuttle. And, they keep playing this charade or whatever. It just keeps going over and over again. And you're going, wait a second. We've got Black Project stuff going to the moon and the Mars. Bob Dean was just here, and he blew the lid off of that. Mm-hmm. All these top people are talking about it, and they're saying, hey, we have technology that we don't need these giant firecrackers to send up and explode with our astronauts on them.
That's all a show. That's all a show.
Yeah, it's all window dressing. But these guys who are supposed to be, the conspiracy guys, the cutting-edge guys that are here to inform us all on what's really going on are still part of the show. They're part of the window dressing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I know. It's, as you know, James, that whole thing is you're trying to navigate a hall of mirrors.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a hall of mirrors, and so it's something to where eventually... And again, the thing of the inventor trying to get the patents and all this kind of stuff. Eventually, I started going, I think we need a different approach, and I don't think this is going to get there. And anyway, that's and the whole Hall of Mirrors thing. It's the thing where the old conspiracism rabbit hole. I mean, you can go deep down that rabbit hole, and never come out. And so it's the thing where I acknowledge it, all that, the black ops and all the fun and games, et cetera. Yeah, it's real. I mean, I acknowledge, I salute Godzilla and I go, you're very good. You're very good at what you do, and it's a thing where, and I don't want to make my life focus on what you are or are not doing. I want to focus on what we can do in a way that can, positively impact the situation. And I think that, if I met Godzilla, I would try to pet him.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, man, we don't need to do this. And but they're hooked, right? They're hooked on their power trip.
What's sad is you really look at this, the people coming out that are exposing all this, they talk about them. They said these people are spiritually corrupt. I mean, they're bankrupt. They're not very evolved people. They're still playing, survival, sex, and power game.
Oh, absolutely.
And trying to control the people through that program. They haven't evolved to the heart, and they haven't even figured out karma or the unified field yet.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. How to say it? They have a long ways to go,
Yeah.
And at what they do, they're very good. And again, I take my hat off to that. You're very good at what you do. And I mean, as Dennis would say, you're very good at what you do, but what you do isn't good. And so it's and the thing is that I don't, I just don't think that my dream is that if enough of us woke up, they would find that they can't play the game any longer. It doesn't work. all their bag of tricks doesn't work any longer, you know. And I, you know, I'm sympathetic, and I'm sympathetic to, you know, on their path, only one person can be emperor of the universe, you know, and, mm-hmm. and they all want the role, they all want the title, but only one of them can get it, at least as high on the food chain as they think they can get, and that's a, yeah, you know. That's a hard. I mean, they're ultimately going to fail, obviously, and I'm actually sympathetic. And you know, it's that's a pretty. When you understand kind of their mentality, it's a really mm-hmm. sad thing. It's a really sad thing.
Can you imagine? Yeah, you're living, you know, surrounded by piranhas, you know, and
yeah, well, totally.
No love, no joy in your life. You're always got to watch your back, you know, and you've always got to be one step ahead. Of anybody else, and you really think about it, you don't have a life anymore. Your life is dictated by the piranha and trying to be one step ahead of everybody else. You have no connection.
It's a hellish existence.
Yeah,
it's a hellish existence. You know, it's like
it
wow. You know, it's and again, it's I would like to think, and again, I have a dream that, and again, I don't think. They're going to be the first people to be reached, and I'm really not interested in trying to convince them. But I think that enough of us woke up and informed a positive intention. At some stage, they may sit back and go, "So, why are we doing this?" And in fact, the I know that the fragmentation at the high levels, that is what's happening. A number are going, "So, why are we doing this again?" and a lot of them are like, "I don't think I want to do this anymore." You know, and so uh-huh. at the same time, they're in pretty deep, right? So it's like you can't retire from the mob kind of thing. So that's exactly. That's part of the problem.
It does seem to be, you know, I have total faith in this unity consciousness that's coming in. You know, the Mayan calendar talks about the ninth wave, and I've watched it work, you know, and it is, you know, everything that's out of unity consciousness that's not aligning with these new energies, it's just getting turned upside down on its head. And you know, all the Native American prophecies, all of them talk about, you know, the end of the beast. And I think we're in those times right now where the beast is, you know, it's not sustainable. There's no way it can continue. It's not frequency specific to where the earth is going. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time before it actually consumes itself. And, you know, and as you can see that with the banksters and everything else. People, other countries, whole countries are rising up and saying, kicking them out, saying we aren't going to go that way anymore. So I think it's just a matter of time before that ship just, you know, is the Titanic. You know, it's going to hit the iceberg and go down. And might be a good idea for people to maybe not book any more future tickets on that ship and start looking in a different direction for their sustenance.
Absolutely. And so I, you know, James, we've been at this kind of stuff for a long time. And so, yes, what we're living through today, you can go back a long ways and there, you know, a lot of visions have been talked about what we're seeing today. And so, yes, I think that we may very well be in the transition times. I tend to think we are in the transition mm-hmm. times because it can't go on like this much longer. I mean, that's for sure. And so it's a thing where, and this is one of my little quaint sayings, I'm always ready for the Muppet movie ending to the free energy quest, you know, and
exactly.
you know, Kermit gets the rich and famous contract and everybody gets free energy and, you know, the ending credits roll and we then go off to another wonderful heavenly future. I'm, you know, I'll always be ready for that. And I'd like mm-hmm. to think that I'm going to live to see, you know, I'd like to see the ending credits of that one play out. We'll see.
I think there's a good chance. It's not too far away. I get a real strong feeling, you know, we're a couple years out, maybe even sooner before, you know, we go through the total shift and you know, the old wraparound and we're back on track, you know, to restore the earth and live in harmony with each other and the planet. But, you know, we are going to have some major challenges, you know, in between. You know, we're running out of time here, unfortunately, so... what's the best way if people want to support your vision and help you, you know, with these projects? What's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Oh, go to my site. Go to my website. Put in Wade Frazier in a search engine, it pops right up. And I actually have a public presence at Bill Ryan's Project Avalon right now. And people can apply and get in and mm-hmm. interact with me. And so, and people have been. They've been tracking me down there. So I have a public mm-hmm. presence now that people can contact me.
Oh, good. Yeah, we definitely will have to get together and talk some more because, you know, it's been my dream to create a template of you know, living in harmony with each other and nature, and then also utilizing these other, you know, fuel of energy and healing technologies that are out there, and we have them. We have connections to these technologies. It's just a matter of creating a template and having a place where people can actually see it working.
Absolutely. You know, and James, what you do there at the ranch is, you've been planting a lot of seeds, bro. A lot of seeds, yeah. You know, and so I think, I'm really hopeful. You know, I'm really hopeful, you know, and this has been great talking to you, James. And it's, in fact, I'll probably take another trip down to your neck of the woods here one of these days soon.
All right. Yeah. Bring some more Boeing engineers with you. I love watching the their minds get totally turned around and trying to wrap their heads around these things flying over.
All right. Well, this has been good, James.
Hey, well, thanks a lot for coming on the show, and we'll have to do it again real soon.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
All right. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. Watch the skies and get behind these fuelless energy technologies because, you know, we actually don't need fuel anymore. We haven't had the need for fuel for quite some time. And guess what? You don't even need tires because this technology is anti-gravity and counter-gravity. So imagine going out to your vehicle, hopping in, powering it up, saying, I think I'll have breakfast in Australia, maybe lunch in Africa, or, you know, something of that nature. It's highly possible, and that technology is here today. It's just not in the hands of the public. So maybe it's time that we demand that it becomes public knowledge. Anyway, this is James with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening.